Okay, maybe I'll say this again. This is on this is a phone bridge meeting workshop on medical abstinence and on traveling abstinently. And my name is Lois. I am the hostess for this and the moderator for this particular workshop. And it's my honor to be able to lead this today and organize it. And I want to thank all of our speakers beforehand because I may forget. I'm just so honored that you guys have signed aboard to do this. You're doing a great service. And everybody who's listening out there, welcome and thank you for attending. I'm going to open this with a serenity prayer, so you please join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. And there's just a few little housekeeping things. I just want to welcome everyone again. Please keep your phones on mute when you're not speaking. And also, I want to let people know out there, the listeners, that there's going to be a question and answer period the last half hour. It's going to go for 2 hours. So it'll be 12:30 our time-ish. There'll be a question and answer. This is not a meeting. The abstinence requirement doesn't apply here. Everyone may ask questions. So please participate. Like I said, it's not a meeting. It's a workshop. Okay. And I would like to ask somebody out there if they would please read the how concept. Someone have it?
Yeah, this is Roxanne. I have it.
Oh, great, Roxanne. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Roxanne. I am a compulsive eater.
Hi, Roxanne.
The Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HAL, thank you. The Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HAL concept has been formed to offer the compulsive eater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery, a disciplined and structured approach, to see how groups have been formed in the belief that our disease is absolute, and therefore only absolute acceptance of the C-HAL concept will offer.
You need to unmute yourself by hitting the star 6 if you'd like to read or speak, please.
Can you guys?
Roxanne, we're not hearing you. Star 6. Can you hear me now? Hello?
Yes.
I do hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. My phone was just having way major problems, so I got a different phone. Okay. Do you want me to start at the beginning?
Please, Roxanne, start.
Okay. The Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HAL concept has been formed to offer the compulsive eater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery, a disciplined and structured approach, to see how groups have been formed in the belief that our disease is absolute and therefore only absolute acceptance of the C-HAL concept will offer any sustained abstinence to those of us whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Therefore, the See How plan of eating, steps, traditions, and tools of recovery are not suggested. Rather, we accept them as requirements for our recovery. Meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the how of the program. We pray that the collective group conscience and love that these ideals offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and wholeness with all of those around us, and that the See How ideal will help us to progress in our program of recovery on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and in the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. Each group also firmly understands that after our recovery has begun through abstinence and the taking of the first three steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offers us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive eating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as we each of us understands him, open our minds and hearts to the love which is manifest in this room. Amen. Thank you for letting me be of service. Sorry.
Thank you, thank you, Roxanne. And Roxanne, you can hear me, can't you? It's Lois. Hi, thank you, Roxanne. Can everyone hear me? This is Lois now, and I'd like to introduce the first speaker. And the first area we're going to speak on that's going to be spoken about is on traveling abstinently. So Kyalani is going to be our first speaker. Hi, Kyalani. Please join us.
Hi, I am here.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay? I want to make sure we have that clear from the beginning.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Perfectly, yes.
Okay. Go for it.
Great.
15 minutes. Here we go. Okay.
Okay, great. Can you let me know when I have 5 minutes to 1 minute? Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, great. Hi, everybody. I'm Kyalani. I'm a compulsive eater, and thank you, Lois, so much for including me in this workshop and this panel. It's one that I actually just feel really strongly about because I've had the experience of traveling quite a bit in my abstinence. So it's such a privilege to be a member of this fellowship, and it's always a privilege to be able to speak at any time, whether it's in a meeting or a workshop or just with a compulsive eater in general. It's my abstinence, my food sobriety depends upon it, so I'm really grateful for this opportunity to share with all of you guys this morning. So I'm just kind of going to jump in. I've been in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HAL since mid-December of 2008, and today I have 1 year and 50 days. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. I am down 47 pounds in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HAL and 70 pounds from my top weight. And, you know, the number one thing that I'm going to say right off the bat, because I think it's the most important thing that I could say, is that my success traveling in abstinence is the secret to the success of that is the secret to the success of this program, which is step one. It's not a secret, but it's step one, and that's conceding to my innermost self that I have an illness, that I'm sick, that I'm a compulsive eater. And it's so simple, and yet for so many years I fought this very simple truth. You know, it's like it's like losing an arm and walking around just like not in acceptance that I don't have an arm. And when I came into Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HAL after many years in the other food fellowship, you know, submitting but not surrendering, you know, that was the miracle that opened for me in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HAL, is when I finally conceded to my innermost self, or like our CEA HAL concept says, absolute acceptance. And so I've found that when it comes to traveling in abstinence as a compulsive eater in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HAL, I have to approach it with the same, with that same surrender that I approach every moment, God willing, 24 hours a day as a compulsive eater. Otherwise, I won't be willing to do what it takes. And if I don't know in the core of my being that I'm sick and I have an illness, I will justify my way and through traveling. So since I've been in CEA HAL, it's been a process. I mean, I think as we uncover, discover, and discard, the more days I have of abstinence in a row, the more I actually see how sick I've been. And that's not something I expected to discover, but I have. So when I first, I remember I flew back east. I'm on the West Coast. When I flew back east, I think just 10 fragile days into abstinence, you know, I still was lost in that idea that I had to eat with other people, that I needed to somehow integrate my meals with them, that if I was with my family, I needed to cook with them. And so I learned really quickly trying to make my first dinner, you know, back east in the house with my mother, and that wasn't going to work out too well because I can't rely on anybody else to take care of my food for me. You know, it's like a mother nursing her child. It's like she can't rely on other women to nurse her kid. It's like it's only going to come from her. And, you know, at the end of the day, my abstinence is up to me and my relationship with my higher power and following the guidelines that you guys have handed me. So pretty quickly, I learned that it wasn't going to work to have other people preparing my food because I can't be sure that they're not adding things. And even if they're not sugar and flour, this is a program of quantity as well. So people are throwing in lots of fats or things into vegetables. I can't monitor that. And for me, this is a program about the freedom from bondage, and I'm a very compulsive, obsessive person. I'm an addict, you know, and so if I'm sitting there worrying about the meal or about what someone else made or didn't make, then I'm not in the freedom, and today I'm interested in being a free woman, period. So regardless of whether or not I'm in the Middle East or in Europe or on the East Coast or wherever I may be, you know, I prepare all my own food. I don't eat out. I know a lot of people in program do, and that's, you know, I trust everybody's own process and program. For me, personally, I weigh and measure and prepare my meals because that's how I find freedom today, and that's what I want. I want freedom, and I want the promises, and I've been experiencing that. So I learned that lesson fast going back east a couple times. I'd say some of my greatest lessons in traveling abstinence have actually been locally, where I just am out all day and I just wanted to make my meals in the morning and to bring them with me, because then I'm a free woman again. I'm not worrying about having to get home to make something. Just like if I had diabetes or any other illness where I know I need something with me at all times just in case. If I have my meals with me, I can be anywhere. I can do anything. And recently I was up north in a very isolated environment shooting a project with a ton of people. I didn't have privacy, and I get up a half an hour early. I bring my food with me. I make it, and I just let people know if they have questions. I just say, I'm on a medical food plan, and to me, my medical food plan is the CEA HAL abstinence food plan, and I swear to God, I have never had one person question me about it. It's like if I say I'm on a medical food plan and I don't have any hesitancy in my voice, people just accept it. It's very simple. And I go out to dinner with people all the time, and I just eat before or eat after, or I have tea with them, and it's not a big deal. And if there's a few moments of awkwardness, it passes very quickly. And I have a cooler that I went to Target. I have a backpack that's you know, insulated backpack, and I have a couple other small coolers. And one of my greatest adventures, traveling adventures in abstinence, has been to Europe and to Lebanon. And I packed basics like canned protein, and I won't say specific foods, but canned protein and some canned vegetable in juice form, and some grain. That way, no matter what, no matter where I was, I know that I have something. And then whenever I'd get to these places, I just would get basic things so that I'd be set to go. And then literally in the morning, whether I'm in a hotel or in someone else's house, you know, I just prepare what I need for the day in Tupperware that has, I've learned this the hard way, but the clap-down lid, because The last thing we want is to be in an airplane or somewhere else and have our lid fall off and have our food fall everywhere. That's like, you know, a nightmare for compulsive eaters. So I learned to buy like the clip-on lids. So it's like you could throw that thing across the football field and it would probably still stay intact. So I make my meals in the morning and then, you know, I could be off exploring a cathedral in London or be in a mosque in Lebanon and or be up in the Cedars in Lebanon on like a 24-hour adventure, and I had like my lunch and my dinner and my breakfast for the next day like in my little backpack with my little cooler ice things and, you know, good to go. And if I can't find cooler ice things because they confiscated them at the airport, then I make protein that I know is not going to go bad in 6 hours or so, you know. So it's all so doable. And I have to say, like, I've literally traveled almost the globe and, or I shouldn't say that, but I've traveled far and I've not had a problem. And I found that people always meet me where I am if I need something. I've always been provided for. And it also means at times having the courage, you know, to say, I need this. And I know for many of us in CEA How, many of us addicts were also Al-Anons or ACAs. And if there's one thing that's threatened my abstinence, it's my fear of being judged by other people and not wanting to create conflict or problems. And that's an area where I can still go into paralysis. So, you know, that quote in program, you know, fail to plan to fail. It's like I can secure my abstinence by making my meals in the morning when I'm traveling so I don't get seduced by events of the day or things, interactions with other people. And I can secure my abstinence by asking my higher power for the courage to put my abstinence first and do whatever it takes. And, you know, I couldn't do any of these trips. I couldn't work. I couldn't be in a relationship with others if I wasn't sober in our program. You know, I don't have the story of being a functioning addict.
That's
not
10
my
minutes.
Experience. 5 minutes?
Yeah, 5 minutes left.
Oh, thank you, Laura. So it's so when I forget, you know, in a moment, I have to get back to step one. It says in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that the great obsession of every alcoholic or compulsive eater is that he will eventually be able to drink or eat like a normal person. And I think one of the tragedies of our disease, of our illness, is that we don't look at it as a real illness. I can speak for myself. You know, I didn't, and I'm so grateful for that grace of that moment where I knew I couldn't do it by myself. And I knew, I just admitted that I was sick. And it's like the one thing the disease doesn't want, and it's the one thing, the only thing that I ever really wanted was just to finally surrender and have the humility, you know, the humility to be like, yep, I can't do it. Tell me what to do. And watch all of my defiance and my resistance come up and just do it anyway and be willing to be wrong. And that's the key thing. The best thing that's happened to me in my life, and I swear to God, if I was a teenager and I thought this would be the best thing that happened in my life, I probably would have been depressed. But the best thing I can say that's happened in my life ever is admitting that I'm a compulsive eater, because from that, everything has blossomed in my life. From that state of surrender, there's an opening, and God can only come in where there's an opening in my experience. And when it's like if I never went to the bathroom, I would overflow. And to me, it's like I have to, for me, without that surrender, there's no space for God, and there's no space for the freedom that I long for. And so that's what I bring with me every day of my abstinence, whether I'm in my home, whether I'm traveling locally, or whether I'm traveling abroad. Also, I'll say one more thing about traveling abroad is that I keep my meals really simple. And at home, sometimes I'll cook more and, you know, but when I'm traveling, I try to keep it simple no matter what. When I'm traveling, I keep it really simple. And there's moments when I'm traveling where it's like I'm eating my protein out of a can. I mean, I weigh it, but it's not like, you know, the ideal meal, but it's just one meal. And I get hopefully, you know, thousands of more meals in my life. So, and in fact, in some ways, it's actually lovely because it's so nice to have it that simple. And it's really not about the food. And in those moments, I get to really experience being somewhere and taking it in. And as a compulsive person, I've never got to enjoy trips, ever. And in abstinence, I've been able to experience that joy that I always saw other people experiencing on trips, but that I never could because I was so lost in the phenomenon of craving. You know, I was so at the mercy of the phenomenon of craving and the obsessive element of this addiction. And to have that food on my back and to be a free woman, it's just amazing. And again, those awkward moments that may come up at times, or the feeling of disappointing other people because I'm not participating in their food.
1 minute.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's just a moment. You know, it's just a moment of discomfort and it passes. And that's part of what this program teaches me, is just to be patient, you know. Discomfort passes, and that's part of growing up and the immaturity that I bring as an addict. Like, the maturity is, oh, this is uncomfortable for a second, and it's over. And now I'm free to participate in relationships. So I think I'll just wrap at that, and thank you so much for letting me share. And I'll leave my number really quickly, if that's okay.
Please, yeah.
It's Kailani, K-A-I-U-L-A-N-I. And my number is 323-243-0364. 323-243-0364. And I'm always available for outreach, and I'll be around after the shares as well. And thank you both so much for asking me.
Thank you so, so much. Okay, our next speaker is Dawn. So please, Dawn, take it away. Hello, Dawn? Star 6, unmute, please. Okay. Dawn? Olga, can you unmute?
Hi, it's Olga.
Hi, Olga, and then Dawn will come after Olga. Okay.
Okay, sure.
Please just go for it. Thank you.
Okay, and could you give me the 5-minute and 1-minute warning, too, please?
I will. Go for
Thanks
it.
Thank you very much.
You got it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Olga. I'm a compulsive eater. My abstinent date is December 8th of 2005, and in the See How program, I have lost 32 pounds and for a total 12-step weight loss of 122 pounds. I'm a business traveler, and I first started to travel overseas probably a year into my program with See How. And the type of places that I go to are not, they're remote. They're oil field locations in South America. They are oil field locations in the Middle East, countries like, I could go to Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, or I can go to Yemen or Libya. So the variety of places that I go are very different. And the most important thing that I found for me when I travel is to pay attention to the tools. The first thing that I do is I contact my sponsor and start, when I first started doing this, I would contact my sponsor and give her all the negatives, all the things that I was afraid were going to happen. And she turned it around, and we talked about positive things that I could do to deal with situations. And the most positive thing that I can do is planning, planning in terms of the tools. I can, hang on for a second. The planning that I do, I need to make sure that I'm contacting my sponsor every day, at least once a day, either by email, phone, texting. I still do my telephone calls, and sometimes I do them as an email if I can't get through on the phone. I do have a business cell phone that I can use. There are a lot of hour differences, but I have found it very effective. I've even had sponsees who travel, if they absolutely cannot use some sort of a phone, they send me a postcard, and they send it every day with their food and their question, and then we're able to kind of connect that way. As far as literature and writing, I do write every day, and I do either write, it's mostly a question out of the See How books. And I found that I can photocopy the questions that I need for my daily writing. I can use the AA Big Book or the 12 Steps that are online so that I don't have to carry heavy books. And if need be, there's paperback copies that I can use. As far as meetings, again, the time zone difference can be a hassle, but it's a matter of planning and knowing ahead of time. There's all kinds of things on the internet that can compute your time. Like if it's 10 a.m. here, what time is it in Qatar, or what time is it in Oman? And then I know that, and most of the time it's late at night or early in the morning, so it's not a problem accessing the meetings. As far as service, my sponsees can still get a hold of me by a variety of methods. Some of the things that I found about food, food, again, it's planning. If I know that I'm going someplace where a lot of people are vegetarians, then I pretty well know, as long as I bring my scale with me, I can measure at a meal. And some of the meals that I've been at have been business meals, and they can range from a meeting with a Bedouin family in the desert all the way to a meeting with the Minister of Health in a country. The field sites that I deal with are easy because part of my job is going in the kitchen and making an assessment of how they're cooking the food. So I pretty well know what's going to happen when it comes out. And I have a great little tiny portable scale that I carry with me with extra batteries. And it's people like to see the scale. As long as I just kind of, it's what I do. You know, I pull out the scale and measure what I'm going to eat, and that's pretty much where it's at. When I take long trips, that might be like 3 weeks, I go in the Forever Abstinent book, and there is a section there that for me, they list a lot of different type foods, and I take a look at the foods and see what will keep. I mean, because there's a lot of box stuff you can bring with you, canned stuff, dried things, juices. Sometimes juices are not good if you're in a plane and the can explodes. It's not a great thing, but there are opportunities for that. There's grains, and then there's mini individual fat packets that you can take with you as far as food. And again, I might not be doing a lot of cooking, but there are opportunities for me to eat abstinently. And I found that I worried more than when I really was faced with a problem. And I need to be honest. I have a disease. And I mean, I don't go up to a stranger perhaps and say I have a disease, but people understand I have an eating issue. You know, they look at you and you're a diabetic or something like that. And I've never had a problem when I measure my food, as long as I do it confidently. You know, like, oh, here's my scale, and I just do it. Some of the things that I've learned, there are customs requirements, so I have to be careful if I'm bringing in some types of proteins, because there's mad cow disease, and a lot of countries may not want you to bring in certain proteins. So, I mean, I need to know, again, it's planning. I need to know ahead of time what type of foods are acceptable in countries. There are certain types of proteins that, for religious reasons, are frowned on in certain countries. So my I'm there on business, so I need to present a view that I'm tolerant of cultures, and there's plenty of other proteins that I can use. And I think the Forever Abstinent book is great because that's where I look first, and there's just so many foods that are transportable. Another issue I have found, I could lose my luggage, so I always bring at least one day's food in my carry-on luggage, so that, because once, when I travel, I could be traveling like 20, 30 hours in a plane with layovers, and I'm tired, and it's, my disease just comes right out, and oh, a little bit won't hurt, but for me, it does. It's so planning to have that in my luggage is just, it's the best thing. And then when I'm in the flight and they start, that I normally fly business class, so they normally have all this food that is wonderful. And, you know, from the old days, it's there. Whereas if I've got something in my suitcase already that I can just pull out, and I'm done with it, and then I go to sleep, and everything is fine. I try to pre-weigh as much as possible before I leave, so that I've got a portion size. If it's like a grain that I would have with my morning breakfast, I will pre-measure 14 or 15 packets of that and just have it. It doesn't weigh a lot, but then it's there, because that could be, for me, a difficult thing to find. I do bring a portable scale, and I bring extra batteries, because overseas and down in South America, the plugs are different. So if I think I'm going to be able to charge everything on a charger, a lot of times it doesn't work. And
that's 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Yes.
I pack a quarter of a cup measuring cup and a teaspoon, and then I can pretty well figure out my measurements from there. I if I'm going to have breakfast in the hotel, I try not to eat with people. I try to pre-order it the night before, and a lot of the hotels have these check-off boxes that so that you order a specific breakfast. But I just find it's easier to write at the bottom what I need, and I've never had a problem getting what I need. If I need something cooked without something that would make it very sweet, I need to tell people. And just, it works. It just, as long as I'm specific, it really works. When I eat out on the road, I try to stick with basics, real basics, no sauces, no nothing. And I try to be very specific when I'm ordering. I do have, it just seems to be a fairly common problem to get enough vegetables. So there are times where I might bring something with me to as an adjunct. The type of places that I go to have the potential, if I'm eating certain foods, there's foodborne diseases that come with it. So I bring waterless alcohol-based hand rub to make sure that my hands are clean before I'm handling food, because the type of disease that I have makes me feel really sorry for myself when I'm not feeling well. And if I think that I want to be, you know, have some comfort food, it can get me into trouble. So I think that for me, the biggest, the tools are there. Sometimes with my abstinence, I only focus on the food, and I forget that the rest of the tools are so helpful to give me strength, so that when I'm in a situation where it's very unfamiliar to me, I don't turn to the food. I turn to my sponsor, my higher power, the big book. I just turn someplace else. And it's been a very effective way for me to practice my program, but I also am aware that no matter how many days of abstinence that I have, the day today is where I need to be, and I need to be abstinent as far as today. That's really all I had to talk about.
Thank you. Do you want to give your phone number?
I'd love to. Okay, I'm in Central Time, and my phone number is 713-898-6048. That's 713-898-6048. And I welcome outreach calls. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Olga. And now, Don, are you there with us? Star 6? Don? Don? Star 6, Don? Hi. In the meantime, Don, if you get on, just pipe right in. And this is Lois, and I just want to share about traveling. I've traveled myself, and especially, U.S., if you're traveling around here, please check out other meetings. And what I do is I call ahead because there's a contact number, and I actually offer to lead meetings when I go to other areas. I happen to be this summer in New York. I'm from California, Los Angeles, and I led a meeting in Brooklyn. And it was amazing, just amazing. And then I attended another meeting before I got on my plane to go to Europe in Manhattan on Saturday morning. And it was delightful. You know, just as a member, I didn't lead that one. Look them up, attend. We bring from our areas, and especially in Phonebridge people, if you're traveling to larger areas that have face-to-face, please avail yourself of face-to-face meetings. It's amazing. And when I traveled to Europe this summer, there wasn't HAL meetings, but I did attend AA, and that is amazing to go, because 12 steps is 12 steps, and you see the rooms look the same banners on the wall, and also I've attended meetings in other languages that I don't necessarily speak, and I have found that when I sit back and just open up the ears on my heart, I can understand. I can understand the humor. I could understand the seriousness. And it transcends. It's just amazing how God prevails. And to hear the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting in another language is just gorgeous, just beautiful poetry. So that's a pretty amazing thing to do. I know we're having the convention this summer, and we're getting translator little cassettes every person could rent. We're going to have about 24 of them. But I personally like to listen to the meeting in another language, and it's just amazing. And like I said, I understand everything. You know, God makes that available to me. And traveling around the states, road trips, take that cooler with you. Take that cooler. And also in the states, we will find that products that we're used to, that we like, our name brands, are fair trade. And if you're Iowa, there it will be. You'll find Quaker or Dannon or whatever you're used to, and you'd be very surprised. And call that sponsor, and like that, you know. And also taking, you know, the calls from my sponsees. My disease doesn't take a vacation, so there you go. And that's what I do. Don, have you gotten on yet? Star 6. I don't know if you've fallen out. Anyway, you know, what I'm going to do, we can still go at night, now go on to medical abstinence. And Woody, are you available? I know someone's trying to beep into me, and I'm not going to switch over. But Woody, are you available?
Yes, I'm available.
Hi. Woody's going to be our first speaker with medical abstinence. But what I want to say beforehand about that, this is the Gospel by Lois, guys, so it's not worth anything. But the reason why I chose to have this workshop, and it was so important to me, is first of all, I listen to the audience out there. Hello? Someone's breathing a little heavy there. Hello? Put it on mute if you breathe. I could hear some breathing. Anyway, people had asked me to do a workshop on with medical and traveling, and that's why I listen to you, and that's where the themes come up. You know, you feed them to me, and I'll put them together. For me, medical has been really, really important issue to talk about, and I had an agenda on that, and it's three aspects. Number one, medical abstinence, hear ye, is a real abstinence. And I hear a lot of people say that medical abstinence doesn't count if you're not doing the health plan exactly all it's written. You're not doing it. That's not true. medical abstinence is abstinence. And number two, if anyone thinks out there that if they go to a doctor and see if they can fill in some foods, you know, to get that extra food or something, people on a medical abstinence, from when I have sponsored people on medical abstinence, they do not have it easier and softer. If anything, they have a harder row to hoe there. They really have a task at hand. It's not the easier, softer way. They're very brave people. And number three, I found that when people are on medical abstinence, the same principle applies, that it's all about being honest, open-minded, and willing. And when you do what your doctor prescribes, by God, your recovery works. And the recovery is more than just the physical. You're not just on a diet here. You get the emotional recovery, the physical recovery, and the spiritual recovery. And with that, I'm going to introduce Woody. Please, Woody, take it away.
Hi, I'm Woody. I'm a compulsive eater. Can you guys hear me well?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay. Could I be timed with a 10-minute notice, a 5-minute notice, and a 1-minute notice? I would appreciate that. Okay. My name is Woody, and my recurring theme is going to become, this is a program of surrender, which I identify as being available for God's will. And I'm going to start off with my first experience with medical abstinence other than my own. I was in program and literally stepped up one day, my 30-day step up, and I was scared to death because I was new to this program. I knew very little about the food plan other than I better do exactly what's in the book. And I really didn't want to identify myself as a new sponsor. And then I said, oh, well, God, you're not going to give me anybody before I'm ready. And as soon as the meeting was over, a man pushed a woman up in a wheelchair, and a woman asked me to be her sponsor. And I just said, oh, God, you do have such a sense of humor. Turns out this woman was extremely medically fragile. She was in a wheelchair because she just had a foot amputated from diabetes. And diabetes had pretty much had its way with all of the organs in her body. And so she was on the verge of tears asking me. She begged me, literally. And so I said I'd be honored. And got the Forever Abstinent book for and the food plan and told her to read it and call me, et cetera, et cetera. When I got home, let me tell you, the first thing I did was call my sponsor, and I had to leave a message in her machine. So then I started calling people in program I knew were nurses, and the first one I got, I said, I've got a sponsor for you. She's on a medical abstinence. And the woman said, well, I don't have room for any sponsors. Why are you calling me to say you have a sponsor for me? And I said, because you're a nurse. And she said, so what? And I said, well, this woman, you didn't hear me. This woman has a medical abstinence. And I said, I know because I read in the Forever Abstinent book that there is a whole concept of medical abstinence. I'm sure what that means is there is a core or a group of medically trained people in program who will handle these cases. She laughed right out loud. And I didn't like the laugh. So she said, that's not how it works. It's not like we have a group of medical abstinence sponsors. Everybody sponsors medical abstinence people. I said, how can that be? You need a certain knowledge of medical conditions in order to do this. No. She said, that's not true. And sorry to burst your balloon. So I didn't believe her, and I called the next two people who were nurses, and they told me the same thing. And I thought, boy, am I in trouble, because this woman is really poorly off. Anyway, long story short, turned out to be a terrific learning experience for me in any ways, which I will get to later, and I will then go to my own situation. I've been on a medical abstinence from the beginning of my time in program, which is 2002, and I have been abstinent according to the medical abstinence for the duration. Lois mentioned that it's no free ride. I have to tell you that everything that I do eat that is off the printed program in the Forever Abstinent book, I eat according to, I ask my doctor to establish quantities maximum quantities, minimum quantities, and I'll talk about that in a minute too, so that I'm eating according to quantities, measured. And I believe it's harder for me because I'm eating things which the program says are things which set up cravings. So I'm dealing with cravings all the time. Not only, though, due to the food. It's because I'm on a massive amount of prednisone and, you know, please God, relieve me of that someday soon because of the cravings. Anyway, what my being placed on medical abstinence, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis in the very month I came into program. So I've been on medical abstinence from the beginning, and it really is all about surrender for me and willingness to do as instructed. And that means two things. One, I have to follow a very specific food plan as laid out by my doc. And two, I also have to follow their instructions regarding meeting attendance, which is hard for me. I call it quarantine. That's so dramatic. Due to the meds I'm on, I am completely immunosuppressed. So during cold and flu season from October 1st to the end of April, I am not permitted to go out in groups of people. So I haven't been able to attend face-to-face meetings. So I am on the phone bridge meetings, usually in the middle of the night. And thank God for those because they are my salvation. But again, it's something that I have to do, and it's part of my surrender. And I have to accept the fact of my medical condition, which I happen to hate, and the fact of my weight. I am here to tell you now the hardest thing in the world for me is to walk into a room and I'm the heaviest person there due to the prednisone. I'm eating often the same abstinent food as everybody else, and I'm eating in measured quantities, and I weigh more than anybody else. That is really, really hard for me to accept. But that's just part of the journey that I'm walking on right now. And I have no control over that. So I get to say thank you for the food plan I do have. What this has meant for my sponsors is that I'm very honest with them about what it is the doctor has said and how it is I must eat. So my sponsors know what it is that I'm eating, which may sound screwy on the food plan, but they know that it's okay. Otherwise, if I don't tell them in advance, it comes as a complete shock to them every time something new comes up for them. And also, I let them know that no special skills are needed. I just need to follow what the doctor has ordered. And it doesn't take anything more than that on behalf of my sponsor to sponsor me. But thank you, God, that in terms of sponsors in general, that they're available, and I believe they must be available to those of us in the program. Many of us have medical conditions often caused by food abuse, but for many other reasons. And we cannot eat according to the food plan. And if sponsors were to say to us, I can't sponsor you, I won't sponsor you, because you're on a medical abstinence, where would all these people be but completely adrift and getting sicker? In a recent workshop, one of the speakers said that, see how people don't sponsor people with chronic relapses. Well, that's not my experience. I spent 2 years in Seattle in Las Vegas, Nevada, and 6 years here in Albuquerque, and that's not my experience at all. You know, our Seattle sponsors do sponsor people who chronically relapse. Our Seattle sponsors do sponsor people who need medical abstinence sponsors. So for me as a sponsor, what this means is if someone asks me to sponsor them on a medical abstinence, I explain that this is a program of honesty and that the sponsee must be absolutely honest with me about his or her medical condition and food requirements. I have the sponsee, and this was stressed to me in Vegas where I grew up, so I do it as I did it. I have the sponsee take the food plan to a doctor and get that page signed by the doctor and write in the margins what the variations are in the food plan, in what quantities also. And then my sponsor shares that with me. I take a look at it. I see exactly what the doctor is talking about. I'm going to inject here that part of my history is terrible bouts with anorexia, and the result of those is that I have tachycardia and a regular heart rate. I will have it forever, set up by electrolyte imbalance, set up by food deprivation. And I am very sensitive to the needs and the mindset of anorexics. If someone asks me to sponsor them and I get the feeling that, I just get the sense that they're really into depriving themselves of food,
what do you
I ask them,
minutes?
How much?
You just did 10 minutes. You have 5 to go.
Okay. Right. I ask them to go to a doctor, have the doctor look at the food plan, and have the doctor specify minimum amounts that the anorexic must eat every day. Because I know what damage I did to myself. I know what rationalizing went on in my head. And I know how serious it can be as a medical condition. So I do that with people I think may be anorexic. I have, again, I don't need any particular expertise in whatever the illness is that the person has. I just need to be able to surrender to the food plan and the doctor's orders regarding the food plan. Also in terms of my self-surrendering, it's hard for me to eat a lot of the foods that the doctors recommend. I mean, they have their good reasons, and they're off my food plan from the book, you know, and I don't want to do it. I want to follow our food plan. And it's difficult for me to work it in. And I don't do it every day. I do it maybe once a week. And I just don't want to weigh any more than I do. And I want to stay as healthy as I can. I know this food plan works for me because even though I have the rheumatoid arthritis and immunosuppressed, both of my parents died from diabetes-related conditions. My brother and my sister, who are both younger, are now on medication because they are insulin intolerant. And I'm the only one in the family who does not have an issue with anything related to diabetes. And my internist is convinced it's because I'm eating according to this food plan. So while I'm not happy with, for example, my physical experience, and I'm not happy making all the accommodations that I have, I know this food plan is working for me. And, you know, so God definitely is coming through for me, too. The other thing I'll mention is the other half of the story about the first person I sponsored. I worked with her for about a year, and we went through all of the steps. It was very scary working with her because it was difficult for her endocrinologist to control her diabetes. And following the food plan, her sugar levels dropped so quickly that 3 times she was in the emergency room in a coma. And even though I knew that wasn't my fault, I was still scared to death. And she was hospitalized for most of the last 2 months of her life and was so proud to call me every day and tell me she was abstinent that day and had to fight with the dietitians in the hospital who kept insisting on sending her things, starchy things, covered with creamy things. I'm not going to go into the details. And she would send it back, and she would order more salad, or she would have her husband go out and bring her in tomato juice, which her own doctor approved of. It wasn't against her doctor's advice to do that, but she was fighting the everything that came into her that was not on the food plan and that she definitely didn't need. Long story short, she died. And she died abstinent. And I'm sure she would tell you from up above that she is very proud of that fact. Her husband told me at the funeral that at the point that she came up to me, she had only been given 6 months to live. I mean, 6 weeks, what am I saying? Six weeks. She lasted a year and a half. And I'm convinced it's the food plan that did it, with variations, of course. And I asked God in the beginning, why did you do that to me? Because I went through a terrible grief spell. And it occurred to me that my mother had died 3 years before, and I had not grieved that because my father died almost simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And I was more focused on my father's dying process than dealing with the grief of my mother's death. And it occurred to me through my writing that God had given me the opportunity now to introduce the grief and deal with it, the grief of my mother's death. Back to my main theme, if I had not been willing to be available to God's will in answering the call to be this woman's sponsor, I would not have had this other growth experience. So with that, I'll close.
Thank you.
Other than to say God works in very mysterious ways.
Let's see. Would you be willing to give a phone number or email address? Or no, you don't have to. It's not compulsory.
I'll give it. I have to tell you that because of my condition, I make 3 calls a day, and that's it. I can't do much more than that. And so let me just say, everybody, I love you with all my heart, and I pray for all of you, but I have difficulty handling a multitude of phone calls, but thank you.
You got it. You got it. Thank you so much, Woody. Thank you. Thank you. Our next speaker is Susie.
Hi, Lilith. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
And I'll give you 10 and a 1-minute warning, okay?
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Lilith, for putting this on. And thank you to all the wonderful speakers. I've learned so much this morning. My name is Susie. I'm a gratefully abstinent food addict and compulsive eater in the Los Angeles area. And I'm going to speak a little bit about medical abstinence. I am a type 2 diabetic. I'm on a medical abstinence plan. Little history. I didn't come into 12-step fellowship for food for a weight problem because I was able to hide my weight problem. I started off as an anorexic in college and then became a binge eater. I never was able to throw it up, so I would binge. And then I would hide the effects of my binging by exercising compulsively and eating very little for several days. So this continued for years and years and years and years until I came into recovery fellowship. so basically I abused my body for at least 20 years, primarily with sugar. That's my drug of no choice, because when I put it in my mouth, I have no choice but to keep eating it. And it took its toll. Now, diabetes has a lot of components. There is a genetic component. My father is an obese compulsive eater with diabetes. I have other diabetics on my mother's side. So there is that gene in my body that was waiting to be triggered. And that plus the fact that I was born addicted to sugar and ate sugar every day, pretty much at every meal my entire life until I came into recovery 5 years ago, that set off this gene into action. And, you know, I didn't eat sugar like a normal person because I am one of us. I would binge on sugar. I would just totally abuse it. And my father's a physician. I remember saying to him when I was a teenager, gosh, Dad, if I eat too much sugar, can I get diabetes? And he talked about it. And in the back of my mind, I kind of almost wanted it, if that sounds so crazy. But I just knew intuitively I had an issue with sugar, even back then. And I didn't know how to be free of that issue. I didn't even think it was a problem. But I knew it was a problem back then. So what happened was in 2004, I was noticing that after eating, as I said, every meal had a sugar aspect in it. And I noticed after I would eat, I would get fuzzy-headed and tired. So I went to my doctor and I said, I'd like to get a test for diabetes. And she said, oh, Susie, you're young, you're thin, you don't have diabetes, but I'll humor you. So she gave me what's called the 3-hour glucose tolerance test, and it's the gold standard for testing for diabetes. A lot of doctors test you fasting. You'll come in the morning to their office, and they'll test your blood. If you're diabetic then, you're way gone into diabetes. That's the last thing to go is your morning fasting levels. A much more sensitive test is you come in fasting, and they test your blood sugar. Then they give you a very sugary drink, 75 grams of sugar in it, and they see how your body metabolizes the sugar. Then they test your blood at 1 hour and at 2 hours and see what your blood sugar is then. She took that test. It came out that I was, quote-unquote, borderline or pre-diabetic, which the research has now shown is the same as being a little bit pregnant. You either are or you aren't. And I was given a blood sugar meter to take home and test myself with. And I quickly revealed to myself that I was full-blown diabetic, because the knowledge of being diabetic, even though in a way I was kind of like, oh, yay, I'm not going to binge anymore, I'm diabetic. Self-knowledge will avail me everything. Well, self-knowledge availed me nothing. So I would go home and I would binge again, and I would take my blood sugar, and it would be extremely dangerously high, and I would be so upset I would binge some more. You know, certainly insane thinking and insane actions. But I was powerless to stop based on knowledge. And my diabetes turned out to be a real gift, a gift in disguise, because it was one of the things that made me hit my bottom. Shortly after my diagnosis, my sister was diagnosed with breast cancer. Because I didn't have any God in my life, I turned to food and began binging more than ever. And that, and of course, my blood sugar was out of control. And that's what brought me in 2005 to fellowship. Now, I hadn't found CHOW yet. I found a different sister fellowship. And by the grace of God, in August of 2005, I surrendered and put down the addictive foods, which for me are sugar and flour, but also for me, wheat, and also for me, artificial sweeteners. I think possibly because I am diabetic, I'm extremely carb sensitive, and the taste of anything sweet will set me off into a craving. So I had to surrender all of those things. Also, by the time I came into fellowship, I had done a lot of research on diabetes, and I had learned what I can and cannot eat safely. Diabetes is a disease of carbohydrate metabolism. When anybody eats any carbohydrate, it turns into glucose. Pancreas secretes insulin, and the cells take in that glucose to use as fuel for our body, for our muscles. When you have type 2 diabetes, as myself, my pancreas still produces the insulin. However, the cells of my body are resistant to it. So the glucose and the insulin are knocking at the door of the cells and saying, let me in, and the cells are saying no, and the glucose is then building up in my bloodstream, and that's what causes the blindness, the amputations, and all the other side effects of being diabetic. So the way to manage type 2 diabetes, one of the key ways, is what not to eat. And what I learned, the things that I could not eat safely, were things with a high carbohydrate level, such as grains. Let me give you an example. A half cup of brown rice, and I love brown rice, but a half cup has 20 grams of net carbohydrates. A half cup of broccoli has 1.5 grams. So I quickly learned which foods would build up the carbohydrate in my bloodstream and which foods wouldn't. So I knew going in, grains were an issue. Starchy vegetables like potatoes, beets, peas, corn, butternut squash, all the yummy carby things I love. No, no. Fruit has a lot of carbohydrates, some fruits more than others, but all fruits turn to glucose very quickly when they hit the bloodstream, and for people like me, that's not a good thing. Dairy has a lot of carbohydrates. So, you know, Lois talked about it's not a softer path. I mean, I went through a lot of poor me. Poor me, I'm a food addict, and poor me if I have diabetes. I can't even have, you know, oatmeal with fruit for breakfast like all my friends are on their food plan. But I got over that. I got over it, and I saw it for the gift that it was. And I began working very closely with my doctor, but also with a nutritionist who specialized both in food addiction and in diabetes. And together we developed a food plan that's actually very similar to the food plan in CHOW for the first 30 days. Except what I needed to do with her guidance is substitute high carbohydrate foods like the grains with lower carbohydrate options like low starch vegetables, green vegetables, for instance. I had to switch out fruit for vegetables. I still have fruit occasionally, maybe once or twice a week in a weighed and measured amount, and I try and exercise afterward because exercise will bring down my blood sugar. But I don't do it daily. The other thing is, as I said, I'm so carbohydrate sensitive that my nutritionist helped me discover this. If I eat fruit too often, if I eat it every day, for instance, even one piece of fruit, I get cravings. That is just how sensitive I am. So, you know, I had to, we're not robots. Everybody's body is different, and I had to learn what worked with me, for me. When I came to CHOW in 2008, I was really blessed by God to find CHOW. I was looking for a very strong fellowship with strong boundaries in my community with a lot of face-to-face meetings. The fellowship I was in did not have face-to-face meetings, and I love phone meetings, and I still do phone meetings, but I needed face-to-face. So I came into CHOW with an abstinent food plan, at a normal weight, already abstinent, with a food sponsor who is not a medical abstinent person herself, but understood that, you know, what I was doing was fine. And I got a CHOW sponsor, and I worked the CHOW questions, and I lived my life. And, you know, if you're sponsoring a diabetic or if you are a diabetic, we have our own little lie detector test, and it's called the glucose meter that we should all have if you're diabetic. And it will tell me in black and white, objectively and empirically, what I can and cannot eat. I thought I could eat jicama. I cannot eat jicama. I thought I could eat rutabaga. I could not. You know, this one thing with diabetes, it forced me to explore these obscure vegetables, kohlrabi, and other things that I'd never even heard of before, but my choices were so narrowed. I thought, all right, you know, I can't eat broccoli and asparagus every day. What else can I eat? And so I have learned to test my blood sugar, particularly after having a new vegetable or a new food, to find out what works for me and what doesn't work for me.
That's
and,
10 minutes.
How many more minutes?
You did 10. You have 5 to go.
Okay, thank you. When I go out to eat to restaurants, and we do go out to eat a lot, my husband's in a business where we entertain his clients quite often. I have a very active family. We travel. We go out to eat a lot. It's part of my life. And, you know, the reason I'm abstinent is to live my life. And I live my life in abstinence because I can bring my abstinence anywhere I go, because I can bring God anywhere I go. And he's the one who keeps me abstinent. And I think someone else mentioned I can get a protein and a vegetable pretty much anywhere I am. I mean, God forbid I'm in an airport and the only place to eat was McDonald's. I could find something abstinent. I would enjoy it. I wouldn't normally ever want to eat there, but I could find something abstinent. Or I could skip a meal if I had to. I would rather skip a meal than eat my addictive foods. Weighing and measuring is very important as a diabetic, because if I eat too much of anything, even if it's a green vegetable, it will take my blood sugar too high. But of course, the other reason I do it is because I'm a compulsive eater. If I'm only supposed to have 4 ounces of something and I let myself have 4.1, I'm going to be off and running. So I do not color outside the lines. I stay within my weight and measured plan. I don't weigh and measure in restaurants. It's not something mandated by my sponsor. And I've never had a problem not weighing and measuring in restaurants. I'm not going to binge. I'm not going to order, you know, 5 whatever. I just eyeball, and I surrender it to God, and I'm fine. But when I'm home, I always weigh and measure. When I go to family members' houses for birthdays or whatever, I always bring my scale. My family thinks I'm a neurotic nut. I don't care what they think. It's fine. When I go to a restaurant, I'm very, very specific. I say to them, I am diabetic. I cannot have any sugar. I cannot have any flour. I cannot have balsamic vinegar. That will set me off. And I ask a lot of questions. And if they bring me an entree, I went out to a Mexican place and they brought me a salad and it had these little tortilla strips on it. And I sent it back. And the waiter gave me a dirty look and I thought, I don't care. I don't care what he thinks of me. I have to protect the integrity of my program. That's the most important thing. Because if I lose my abstinence, I lose my connection to God. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. And I need to be connected to God so I can be of service to other people so I can live in love and service. That's where the joy in my life comes from. It doesn't come from the food at all. Since I've gotten been on my food plan, I've had to adjust it some more. I had high cholesterol. And instead of going on a statin, I worked with my nutritionist to make some adjustments so that I can address my cholesterol issues through my food. You know, Hippocrates said, let your food be your medicine, let your medicine be your food. And so for medical reasons and also for personal reasons, I eat very little animal protein today. And that has worked very well for me as well. So again, my message to you is, if you do not have a medical reason, don't be afraid to sponsor someone with medical abstinence. Have them go to their doctor, nutritionist, dietitian. It's not a big deal. It's very doable. If you do have a medical problem, again, it's very easy to stay abstinent on a medical food plan. It's just like being on a food plan. A food plan's a food plan. So you have broccoli instead of brown rice. Big deal. You know, it's all doable. And the bottom line is, it's not about the food. It's about the steps. It's about having a relationship with a power greater than yourself and finding the food plan that will keep you abstinent, craving-free, at a healthy weight, and living in recovery. And so that's it. Thank you for letting me be of service. Let me give you my phone number. I love outreach calls. I will always return your call. I may not return it that day, but I promise I will return it. My phone number, it's a Verizon cell that anyone can call, 310-617-6016.
Okay. Susie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, because my battery ran out on one phone and I had to run and get another one. Anyway, thank you so much. When you want to just repeat the phone number again, or did
Absolutely,
I miss it?
Absolutely, yes. 310-617-6016, and I love outreach calls. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you so much. I was wondering, Don, are you on the line by any chance?
Am I on the line by any
chance?
There
you go. There you are. Would you please give us your talk on travel?
Okay.
I
am Don, and I am a compulsive eater, and the program comes first. I've traveled all over the world. I've been abstinent for 20 years and 11 and a half months, and I've been kept my weight for close to 20 years. Let me see. When I was in my first year, I had a year and I was on maintenance, and I got a job touring Japan. It was a 5 or 6 week tour, and this same group had gone previous years, and the guys who had been there said, here's what we do. Food is very expensive in Japan, but you get the breakfast at the hotel for nothing. And so we eat as much as we possibly can at breakfast and then skip lunch and have a light dinner, and we save a lot of money. So I went to my, at the time it was O.A. Howe, my O.A. Howe sponsor, and said, here's what we do. And he listened to that plan and said, how much is your abstinence worth to you? Oh. He said, I suggest that you continue doing, you've been abstinent for a year, and I suggest that you continue with the food plan. So that's what I did, and I came back actually lighter, and all the normal eaters on their money-saving food plan, by the time the tour was half over, they couldn't button their pants anymore. So
I'm not waiting until I go on. I'm on the bridge meeting.
We can hear you.
Okay, so is it, am I still?
Don, you're with us, but there's some people out there that need to mute. Please push star 6 so we can hear the
speaker. I'll be out in the car, but I have another 10 minutes. don't you just mask mute?
Please push star six, people. We can hear you. Okay, John, keep talking.
So should I continue?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Okay. The first thing I do when I'm going on a trip is do the research and the preparation. I, depending on where I'm going, I can find on the HAL intergroup list. I can at least get a name and a phone number.
Hello?
Cannot hear the speaker.
I know, we cannot hear the speaker.
Am I on now?
There you are. There you are. And Don, wait a second. Please, people, please keep it on mute. That's star six so we can hear the speaker. We can hear all sorts of conversations in the back. I'm sorry, Don. Please continue.
Okay. The first thing I do when I'm going on a trip is research. Where am I going? And I want to get a contact. At least in the same state or in the same country, and I can find I can start with the See How intergroups and get a name and a phone number and call them in advance. And the first thing when I get into the hotel is the first thing I do when I check in is make a contact. Talk to a living human being someplace in the area and say, my name is Don and I am a HAL member from Los Angeles, and what do you know about meetings and phone calls? And then I have to be... depending on what's available, I must be willing to go to any lengths to attend any meeting that is in the area, whether it's walking or taking a cab or a bus or asking for a ride. Very often the local people will pick me up, or I have even rented a car in order to get to a meeting. I must be willing to do that. Normal people, when they're going to New Orleans, their friends say, oh, you must go to Brenneman's. When I'm going to New Orleans, I think immediately I must find a meeting, and I must find HAL members, and the alternative is AA meetings, and I can find that in the white pages of any phone book in the country and or in the world. And I can get an AA meeting, and very often by talking to the AA people, they can direct me to a HAL meeting, if there is such a thing. In Japan, I was going to to AA meetings, and one of the most active girls there told me she had an eating problem, and she wanted to start HAL. And I, when I got home, I sent her a great deal of literature, and hopefully now they have HAL there. The first thing I do when I check in is make the contact. The second thing when after I check in is go to the concierge or the desk clerk or the bellman and say, where's the nearest supermarket or produce store whatever I have to do to tell them fruits and vegetables. And I find where I can buy whatever I need. I need to, the labels, the amounts are on the label. I just have to convert to grams and liters, but it's a matter of having, along with my cup and my scale, I have a little conversion table. Most hotel rooms now have a refrigerator and a microwave. And if it's not, if the microwave is not there, I can call housekeeping and get it a small extra charge, and they will throw in a couple of pots and pans and a dish and fork and give me everything I need. The time change can be 9 hours or.
I'm in a meeting on the phone. What?
Hello?
Please put it on mute. We can hear conversations.
Okay.
Sorry, Don. Please continue.
Okay.
You have about 5 minutes here. Yeah.
Okay, regarding time change, it can be 9 hours difference in London or in Tokyo or in Australia. And so I simply take a 24-hour period, and in that period I have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I have never missed a day reading and writing. That is, that's why I've been abstinent all this time. That is Fred S.'s legacy. And no matter where I am, or I do the reading and the writing. If I'm rooming with somebody or staying at somebody's home, then I get up 15 minutes before anyone else and take care of that first. Let me see. Phone calls. That first trip in Japan, if I called my sponsor from the room, it would be $35 on the bill. I could go down to the lobby at 1:30 in the morning, which was my regular time at home, and drop coins in the slot and make it for about $11. But there again, how much is my abstinence worth? And now it is far less expensive with cell phones and the phone service. Meetings. With my family. They are very much very supportive of my program. When I'm there, they will furnish me with a car to go to meetings. They'll look it up in the phone book for me, or very often my sister, who loves me, wants to cook for me, and then because she loves me so much, she'll throw in a little extra. So I have discovered it's far better to take her to a restaurant, and then we get everything we need. I have never had a problem not being able to get what I want when I'm with my family. Let's see. I've been in Brazil and Argentina and Australia, and I met program people in Australia. They took me to the sanctuary. That is, to us, that's sanctuary, and it's the zoo, and we saw a duck-billed platypi, and in Japan, you have to be careful when you buy at the grocery store. I bought something that was obviously, I could tell it was vegetables from the, because I could see through the glass. However, we were on the bus when I opened it, and 20 people screamed at the odor was so bad from opening that bottle. I immediately threw it out, but I was highly unpopular. It looked okay, but it did not smell well. And let me see. In Japan also, they have models of the plates, exactly what they serve. And it's actually made of plastic, but it's an exact replica of what they serve on the menu. And our host took us to a restaurant where they serve you have hot water, and they serve raw meat and raw vegetables, absolutely nothing added, and you simply dip them in the water until they're done, and then you eat the soup.
Okay, so 1 minute to go, Don. 1 minute.
How many?
1 minute. You're on the wrap now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so.
I weigh and measure without fail, and I go to meetings without fail, and I thank you for the opportunity of being on. My phone number is 818-885-1594. I'm willing to help anybody anytime, and I thank everybody for, particularly Lois, for asking me to do this, and it's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you
so much, Don. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And now our last speaker, and it will be on medical, is Faye. Hi, Faye.
Please, could he repeat the phone number, please?
Oh, Don's number, 885. Area code 818-885-1594.
818-885-1594. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Faye? Hello, Faye? Star 6. Hi, Faye. Come on.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi.
Yes. Hi. I'm Faye. I'm not sure how I'm supposed to introduce myself. I wasn't really...
Just go for it, girl, and I'll give you 10 minutes and a minute to wrap, okay?
Perfect. I heard that. Okay, I'm a type 1 diabetic, and when I first came to see Hal, when I got on the food stamp, I took it to my doctor, and he thought it was a good idea. I'm on an insulin pump 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so it's a little bit different than those that take the pills. Because you have to keep your blood sugar level. And as you lose weight, your need for insulin changes. As your body mass gets smaller, you need less insulin. So it's a constant, you have to test a lot. You have to use a glucometer a lot. And my first sponsor was not a medical sponsor and had never even, didn't know anything about diabetes. And I only sponsor pretty much medical abstinence. Because there's just a really a need for that out there. So I try, and that's why I introduce myself at all meetings as a type 1 diabetic, so people can call me. I'm not saying I'm a doctor. I always make sure they talk to their doctor, because every diabetic is different. As I heard before, the last diabetic, so everybody processes their carbs differently. My sponsor is also on, my new sponsor, that I've had her a long time, is also on the insulin pump. And even she, like, if she's low, she has an ounce of Triscuits, it'll bring her back up to normal. An ounce of Triscuits will not even bring me back up to on my feet again, whereas I need an apple. And the thing is that I eat half my fruit at breakfast, and I skim an ounce of protein from somewhere during the day, and I have what's called my medical at night. I have a half a fruit and an ounce of protein at night to get me through the night. I don't necessarily get more food, and which is a common problem with a lot of diabetics who call me and say, well, I'm diabetic, so I get to have more. And I said, okay, well, did your doctor say? You know? And they're like, no. I said, well, we need a note from your doctor, and whatever your doctor recommends is what we will accept. It's also very important for me to have my grain. I once got very vain with the weight loss, and even though I've lost 286 pounds, I want more. I want those last 40 to come off faster. So I said, oh, I'm going to do without grains. So I went without grains, and I took in more calories and sugar from the juice I had to intake to bring me back up to normal than from the 3 tablespoons of oat bran. You know, so right. I put the grains right back in. And I also recommend a lot of my diabetics, especially the ones on pills that are really far gone, that they do have their grains twice a day during the first 30 days, because otherwise they go really low, and they tend to not keep their abstinence that way. And so I tell them to talk to their doctors, see how they, you know, they're doing. My latest sponsee came in on 11 diabetic pills a day. After 2 months, she's now down to 2 a day, and her blood sugars are near perfect all day long just from our food program. The only time she gets extra or I get extra is, like they said, that good old truth detector, the glucometer. And I tell her, you know, and another way of being on the up and up when you're medically abstinent and diabetic is my sponsor and I would text each other. My blood sugar is 63 and dropping. I'm going to have a banana. That way we know we're not out there saying, well, since my blood sugar is only 63, I need a box of graham crackers and a gallon of milk. You know, it keeps us honest. And then you test again, and if it's still low, you have something else.
Well, try that.
So it's very important. My body, I don't even, because I don't eat very many carbohydrates, I do not have to bolus, which means add insulin for my eating, normally. If I'm stressed out or sick, you know, everybody gets higher or lower, and you have to test. I also exercise every morning quite rigorously, and I check my blood sugar before I exercise. I have half my breakfast before I exercise, and I have the other half after I exercise. I turn off my pump and I do my exercising. Otherwise, I'd be adding more food, and which would, you know, be detrimental to the whole thing. I do have a hard time dealing with the fact that I have to face our addiction more than 3 times a day. And a lot of people suggest to me I do 6 or 7 small meals a day with the same amount of food we get, but spread it out. And I'm like, are you crazy? That's like 7 times a day where I can potentially freak out. No. The other thing is I had to come to terms with is also you don't lose weight as fast when you're on the insulin and you have that extra piece of fruit or whatever you need to keep yourself alive. And it's something I think a lot of us on medical abstinence go through. You know, we see other people who lose really, 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 really fast, and we're still, you know, plugging along. And the one person very wise who's also a diabetic said to me, well, what's the alternative? Do you want to be 450 pounds and dying again? No. And then, you know, just shut up and do it. So that's basically it. And there's a lot of guilt. I mean, my own sponsor will text
me. I'm eating the rest of your food.
My own sponsor will text me and say, my blood sugar's 40. Do you think I should eat? And I'd say, well, yeah, I need a sponsor. Don't die, you know. And that's, we just kind of laugh and, you know, and then she eats and she gets over it. You know, she'll say, I feel so bad because I had to have, you know, a banana and then it didn't go up and I had to have a little juice, you know. And that's also what's kind of hard about being a diabetic, but you have to deal with it, is that we do get a little bit of that sweet. And so, and it really does trigger the addiction. And you have to be extra vigilant. You have to do extra praying and extra reading and writing just to make up for all that, because it's just... It's a total mind thing, and you have to be hyper aware of what's going on. And
I
it
have.
Takes self restraint,
yeah.
Because I keep juice boxes next to my bed at night, and glucose tablets. And the thing is being a compulsive eater, you know, you want
to
say, oh, I feel a little weird. I think I deserve a juice box, you know, that kind of thing. So the whole thing is like, you know, you've got to test your blood. rigorous honesty is the most important thing, and having, you know, support systems to say, my blood sugar's low. I mean, even if it's 3 in the morning, we'll text each other. My blood sugar's low. I need to have, and, you know, that way we know that we're accountable to somebody, you know, and it's, you know, it's worked. I've gone down from 310 units of insulin a day. I only take 30 now. And as my body mass decreases, it gets lower and lower. And I don't really need to exercise to bring my blood sugar down. I do it more for my mental health. And I do it because it feels good. And the other thing is I got involved in exercising the other night. A trainer came up, wanted to show me new things. I didn't even think of my diabetes, you know, and I was like, sure, let's go. So I exercised a whole extra hour through dinner, and by the time I was leaving, I almost couldn't walk, and I was shaking so hard, I almost couldn't put the straw in the juice box. And so that's one thing, you've got to be hyper-vigilant at all times. But the medical abstinence, I think our food plan is like one of the best things, even a diabetic or anybody could be on it. I mean, who can argue with, you know, weighing and measuring all your food and having protein and vegetables and, you know, your one, you know, fruit a day, you know, two if you have to. And it sure beats the times when I used to go out and just, I can't believe how much food I used to eat, and I can't believe how irritated I'd get with the doctors when I couldn't get my blood sugars under control, and they would say to me, hey, just stop eating. And I'd say, what the? You don't know anything, whatever. You know, that's not why I'm sick. That's not why I can't feel my legs. That's not why I have congestive heart failure. You know, you don't care about me. All you care about is my fat. And you don't, you know, that whole thing. And the funniest thing is I recently went to the doctor, and I used to have a list of 15 things wrong with me that I wanted him to magically fix. And he used to always just say, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. Eat better. And I'd be like, oh, you're an ass. You know, sorry, my language. And he's like, you're an ass. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, let me tell you, after being on program for 2 years and 3 months and whatever days, I went in to see him, and he was laughing, not only because I'm looking so small, but because he goes, where's your list? I said, I don't have a list. I just need to refill on my insulin, you know? So I went from 40 pills a day down to just insulin and one other pill. And
that's 10 minutes. Got five to go. Thanks.
Okay, and it's been a miracle, no less than a miracle. And I have noticed that when I do my reading, writing, and praying, it is just so much better than when I don't. And sponsoring other medically challenged people is so much better, because if you are not in your medical abstinence, you really kind of don't get it. And I know it seems odd. You get a lot of people saying to me, why do you do that? Why do you do this? And the people who know me well and are my really close friends, they understand. But the people who don't, just say, hey, you know, how come you only lost 4 pounds last month? Everybody else is already at their goal weight, you know. They just don't get it. And so I think it really helps to have a support network of other people who understand the medical abstinence. And they know that, you know, you're not eating, you know, anything that ends, you know, with bad stuff to keep your blood sugar going. We are honestly eating what we have to stay alive and not end up in a coma and die. And that's just the bottom line. To stay alive, but do it abstinently. And it works. It works for us. And I don't know, any of you ever have any questions, I can give you my phone number. It's 818-518-7498. And not before 9 and not after 9, please.
Can I give it one more time?
818-518-7498.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And, hey, everybody, we have 20 minutes left on the phone call, about 21, and it's now going to be open for question and answers. So please pipe right in. Like I said, this is not a meeting. Abstinence is not a requirement. So please start asking your questions. I know someone's got one out there, whether it's on traveling or medical. Come on.
Yep. I'm still here if anybody has questions.
Take it off of mute, *6, and ask your questions.
Hi, I'm Fran, and I'm grateful for recovering from compulsive overeater.
Hi, what's your name again?
Frances.
Hi, Frances.
Hi, Frances.
Could you give me some tips about holidays? What do they do when they on trip and, you know, with people, and then there's all this holiday food that's just rolling around and just makes you lose your appetite.
I have something for that.
I would like to ask that question.
Oh, there were two people who wanted to answer that. Okay. Go for it.
I'll answer really quickly with Kailani. My experience is that no one and nothing can take away my abstinence but me. And it starts off with what I said at the beginning of my share, which is that, you know, my success in this program during holidays or today on April 18, 2010 depends upon me competing for my innermost self that I'm a compulsive eater. I know that I'm sick these doors to abstain from what anyone else may or may not be eating. It's a privilege. You know, it's a privilege to get to recover one day at a time. And I'm here to save my life. I'm here to recover emotionally, physically, and spiritually. So it really doesn't matter what's happening around me and what day it is during the year. I follow what I follow to stay alive and become who my higher power would have me be. And I do that through weighing and measuring, abstaining, and following all the other seven tools that our speakers address.
Thank you. Is there somebody else who wanted to answer that?
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
This is Woody.
Hi, Woody.
Oh.
Did I cut someone off?
Yeah, Woody had something, an answer.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I'm going to relate a little experience. Recently when I went to a doctor and my regular doctor couldn't see me and they gave the option to me of having another doctor see me, and I did. And he walked in the room with the file and said, "Oh, excuse me, I'm in the wrong room." He turned around and he walked out. He came back in about 2 minutes later, and he said, "Are you?" And then he said my name, and I said, "Yes." He said, "I thought I was in the wrong room because I'd been reviewing the file. And for as much prednisone as you've been taking, for as long as you've been taking it, I expected to see someone who weighed 100 to 150 pounds more. You must be doing something awfully right." And I was floored because, to me, I don't like my weight. But what drove home the point to me was, with the prednisone that I'm on, I cannot allow myself any liberties. So if it's Thanksgiving, I say, "What day is this?" when I wake up. If it's Thanksgiving, I say, "Oh, it's Thursday." And I eat a regular weekday food plan. Even if I am, and I always do accept an invitation to someone's house, I have my 4 ounces of the traditional protein served on Thanksgiving Day. My people know, the people who host me know that I can have 4 ounces of sweet potato, for example. They have that for me. They have a special salad dressing for me. On that Thanksgiving Day, there's another family that always joins us, and their kids always prefer to eat my food to theirs. To everything else that's out there on the table, they prefer my food. If it's Christmas, I wake up and say, "Thank you, God, you know, it's Christmas, and what day is it? It's Tuesday." I will eat a regular weekday food plan. It doesn't make any difference what the holiday is and what I'm exposed to. I know that for my own health and life, I have to follow my food plan. Thanks.
Very much. There's another panel.
I'd like to ask a question, please.
Sure.
May I?
Sure. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jane, compulsive recovering food addict.
Hi,
my
Jane.
My question is, this is a fantastic, fantastic meeting today, and thank you all who are responsible for putting it on. My question is, if you're sponsoring someone who's a diabetic, who do you listen to? Her diabetic, her dietitian, or her doctor? Who do you go by? Who is the one that is more important? Because one person I was sponsoring, the dietitian had her eating a lot of grains and a lot of fruit, and she wasn't losing weight at all. and she was having excessive fruit and excessive grains. So I recommended her to ask her doctor what he thought. And then we changed things around because in our tools, our seven tools, it says something about, you know, anybody who's a doctor or a food person, we have to go by that. Which one do you do in that case? I don't know if I'm explaining myself correctly.
I understand. This is Faye, type 1 diabetic.
Yes, go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. I always recommend that I ask the sponsee, is a nutritionist in cahoots with the doctor? Are they in the same office? Do they know each other? And quite honestly, I have to see it in writing. And I don't care if I have to look at the doctor's one and the nutritionist's one. I look at them both. And I have her tell her, well, if you're not losing weight on this one, talk to your doctor, see what your doctor does. And they're diabetic, so they can tell what's going to work and what's not, A, by the way they lose weight, and B, by their blood sugars throughout the day. If they're on too much grain or too much fruit, it's obviously going to show up in the blood sugars. So yeah. I always say Dr. Trump's nutritionist, because some nutritionists are, you know, as we all know, some of them are pretty not really on the up and up. It's just, you know, and I always say bring it to your doctor, see what your doctor says. Let the doctor know you're not losing weight. What does the doctor want you to do?
Thank you very much.
I'm going to pipe in, too.
Sure.
It also depends sort of on a case-by-case basis because some endocrinologists, the American Diabetic Association, for example, says there's nothing wrong with diabetics having sugar because they know that the average human being cannot give up sugar because most people are not in a 12-step program. And so, for instance, my physician encouraged me to talk to a dietitian and nutritionist who was an expert in diabetes because she didn't really have the knowledge she needed to help me. So you kind of have to go by case-by-case basis, but as Faye said, your sponsee's glucose meter is the lie detector test. And if that's high, she knows she's eating too much grains and fruit. And as a diabetic, we're particularly drawn to those things because they give us, for me anyway, it gives me a hit. It was a carb, and carbs give me a big hit. And also there's a test called the A1C test, which all diabetics get about every 3 months to test their average blood sugar over a three-month period. That will also tell your sponsee how she's doing and if her food plan needs to be tweaked a little by a knowledgeable dietitian or physician. Most physicians only have one nutrition course during medical school, so that's something to keep in mind also.
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah. And this is Woody, if I may. In sponsoring diabetics, I frequently suggest that, because some people go to any old nutritionist, that surprises me.
Hmm.
I suggest that they go to a diabetic educator, and they can get a list of these names from an endocrinologist's office, for example. And that person's recommendation, when approved by an MD, that's what I'll follow.
Okay.
Now, as I said, I'm not a diabetic myself. However, the rest of my family is. And that has been our experience because, my father received some really crazy advice. I myself know, even being in another program, if I wanted to eat certain things that wasn't exactly what they wanted, I could look up any nutritious in the phone book and go there and pretty much talk them into recommending what it is I wanted. So I sort of do it. They work in conjunction, but the nutritionist has to be a diabetic educator type of nutritionist. Yeah.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Hello, this is Don.
Hey, Don.
Originally, the food plan called for your doctor, and at one point the board added your health care professional, but originally it was only your doctor's approval.
Yeah, well, the reason for that, and it was the board, is that some people could not afford it to go to a physician. They had to rely on public health or what have you. So that's why the wording was changed as such to a health care provider. So it was to make it, as our name, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, isn't Overeaters Anonymous, we encompass everyone from morbid obesity to anorexia, and we encompass people of all economic stations and availabilities. So we make that available. That's why the wording was changed as such. Thank you.
I have a question. My name, or maybe it's a comment, my name is Esther, Compulsive Eater.
Hi, Esther.
Hi. I was told by my doctor, who also has a nutritionist in her office, that I needed to go on medical abstinence. And I explained to her that I was on HOW, and I did find a sponsor that would help me and help me with this program, because there were some things that I had to discuss with the nutritionist that were uncomfortable that I couldn't eat. Meantime, there's people on the program that I had one call in particular, and this woman just sounds so sweet on the phone, go, well, what is your problem? Why does the doctor have you on medical abstinence? You shouldn't be on medical abstinence. I don't think you should even go to these meetings. And, I mean, I would just, whoever this woman is listening, just to say that, you know, like, if you're a doctor, just, you know, don't, I wouldn't go to you. And just, you know, keep, I mean, isn't there a line to where people can say things to you? You know, like, I guess everybody has their own opinions, but that just really made me angry. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. Also, we learned to tell boundaries here. Please, other panelists, please pipe in.
Yeah, this is Kailani. I just want to state that, you know, due to our traditions, everybody is allowed in CEA HOW. There's no boundaries. The only case for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. And so I think we all have.
What's the game doing? Oh, the Cubs are winning.
I think we all have experiences where some outreach calls are more than others. But I did just want to adjust that.
And I just want to say that, you know what, we're all sick here. None of us are well. It's not, you know, well People's Anonymous or anything.
Do you want to come in?
I just thank them kindly. I said, thank you for your input. I said, you know, and that's it. Because I do get a lot of comments, sometimes, you know. And when I sit down with somebody, when abstinent or not abstinent, I keep my eyes on my own plate, not on theirs. And I don't ask them, you know, whatever they got to do to them, it's their program. So, and you know, it's between me and my sponsor. That's what I always say. And when my sponsors come back to me and say, oh, so-and-so said I need to say this and this to you, I said, are they your sponsor? No. Okay, then. No, you don't have to do that, you know, that kind of thing. But a lot of people, because we're not well and we do have negative thinking and we compare ourselves to others, I think that's just, it's just the nature of the beast being in these rooms or on these calls. So it's hard, but got to kind of develop a thick skin for that. And don't hug them. No, I'm kidding.
How I've handled this is Lois, because I didn't have that much weight to lose. I was a bulimic. And there's some people that say you don't deserve to be in these rooms. What are you still doing here? Blah, 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 blah. Especially in my first 2 years, I would say, people used to come up and say rude, cruel things to me. And I'm glad I persevered, and I had great sponsors, too. But now when someone comes up to me or calls me and says, I need to say something to you, what I say to them first, called healthy boundaries, I say, is this going to hurt me? And if they say anything like, oh, I don't know, I never thought of it, I go, good. I don't need to invite problems into my space. And I'll just say to someone, you know, go talk to your sponsor about it. I don't even want to hear it. It's none of their business. My program is no one's business. And I don't even talk about food or discuss any of that with people, except for my sponsor. And I also live with someone who's on program, and he eats entirely different than I do. I mean, he's a man, he eats a lot more, blah, 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 blah. Keep my eyes off of his plate. He keeps his eyes off of mine. But I do not invite trouble into my life, and I do interview, like I said, someone first, and will say to them, whatever you have to say to me, if it's going to injure me, I don't want to hear it. And if someone called me up, I would just get off the phone. You know, it's really none of your business, and with all due respect, and I would hang up. That's how I am, and that's what I do, and I teach my sponsees, you don't have to allow anything cruel or awful into your space and let that person, apparently they're ill,
God bless them, and that's how I do it. I've learned how to have healthy boundaries. Thank you. Anyone else have any comments or any more questions?
This is Woody again, and I, you know, regarding that particular question, I just say, well, you don't have to live with my body and or in it and be grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how I work my recovery program is between myself and the forever abstinent and my doctor and my sponsor and my higher power. And those are the only people that I allow to comment. But regarding allowing the doctors to comment, I had a heck of a time getting into program because the first three doctors I went to didn't approve this food plan for me. Two were primary care, and one was my rheumatologist. It took me 4 months, and finally a new internist that I got thought the program was wonderful, and she approved it. But it took me 4 months to get in. And I just sort of had the sense that what they were telling me wasn't right. I think there are times that your higher power will give you the indication that what you're hearing isn't right or good for you. Now, I'm not saying I should have gone on to 10 doctors and ignored everything all of them said, but I just had a sense that what they were telling me wasn't quite right for me. And so, it's, you know, it's not only the people in this program or laymen in general. It can be docs, too.
Yep, yep, yep.
Hello, I have a question.
Please.
I have a question, too. Okay. Hi, my name's Caroline. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Caroline.
I'm hoping this hasn't been covered because I my phone died a minute ago. But I just wanted to say that I got on a medical abstinence, but it wasn't for, you know, some, you know, reason like a disease or something. It was, you know, because I was nervous I wasn't getting enough food and I wanted to keep exercising. And so I went to the doctor, and you know, she added a few things in, and then when I went on maintenance, I still felt like I was really exhausted and dizzy. And so then I went to a nutritionist, and the doctor, you know, okayed it because she said, you know, we're really not trained in nutrition. So I'm just wondering if, you know, if I kind of bent the rules because I don't really have a medical condition.
The board of directors, it's between you, your sponsor, and your higher power. And you guys work it out.
Oh.
So, anyone else have anything else to put on this?
It's
not
Kay.
A
matter
okay.
You're not feeling good, and you're sick. That's medical. I mean, it's a reason. I mean, if it's affecting your nerves, if it's affecting your health, your tiredness, your weak, you're working out, it's you know, like everybody else says, between you, your sponsor, your doctor, and your higher power. And who's to say it's not medical? If it has to do with the health of your body, it's medical.
Okay, great. Thank
and recovery
you.
Is recovery is not just the diet. Recovery in how it's a multifold program. It's to grow spiritually, emotionally, mentally, in all areas of your life.
Overeater. Would you like to take care of that background noise?
I've been begging people to please shut off and put it on mute, but I've given up. So maybe you'll have some effect. Thank you for. Okay, another one more question.
Hi, this is Catherine. I have a question.
You need to hit star 6 if you'd like to speak, please.
Hi, this is Larissa. I have a question.
Hello.
Hi, this is Larice. I have a question.
Go ahead.
Hi, I have a situation where I was sponsoring someone who said they were on medical abstinence due to a lot of allergies, and had what I think you said it. I was kind of early in my sponsoring role. I don't know whether I had 30 days or whether I must have been maybe about 6 months of abstinence, and this person had, like, you know, a cup of nuts 3 times a day, and I mean, it was just, I felt like it was pretty crazy, but they had it from a nutritionist and blah blah blah. And so what I did was I worked with my sponsor, and my sponsor, because I felt like I was sort of out of my league, And my sponsor, you know, as a non-medical abstinence person dealing with someone who had what they called a medical abstinence, and my sponsor referred me back to, you know, the Forever Abstinent book, which has really good writing on medical abstinence. And I read this to this person because they weren't staying abstinent on it, and I made a number of outreach calls on it. But I just thought I'd ask if you have gotten, any of the people have gotten people who are sort of using medical abstinence, because I know, actually, I felt like it was my own teaching, because when I first, I'm almost through talking here, when I first came into program, I manipulated my first sponsor. I went to the doctor and I said, I'd like to do this, and the doctor okayed it. So I felt like kind of as I was getting back my own, what I had done. But I was just wondering, for experience, strength, and hope, have you also had people who are trying to manipulate things by having a medical abstinence? Thanks.
I'd like to address this really quickly. I'm Kailani, I'm a compulsive eater. I'm not in a medical abstinence, and I appreciate what I've heard today, because I've definitely had a lot of people call me in the past wanting to do medical abstinences without any diagnosed illness. And the things that I hear are just clearly disease. And I know for myself, when I come into this room, I'm lying and I'm dishonest without even knowing it. And I want to hold on to my way, and I don't want to do what I'm told. You know, it's like I'm miserable and I'm sick, and yet I want to hold on to it, and I think that I'm right. So, I mean, clearly there's people out there who need to be on medical abstinence, and I really appreciated hearing that today. And I definitely have to remember, as a sponsor and as a compulsive eater, that I have an ability to justify almost anything. And that if I'm coming into the room feeling sick, it's probably because I'm a compulsive eater. You know, like if I'm having weird symptoms, it's probably like, you know, a few months on the food plan might change all of that, and to give what's written a try. And I'm not speaking about people who have diagnosed illnesses, but when I've addressed other women who I've sponsored, you know, many times I've gotten so many phone calls months and months and months later saying, thank you for calling me on my DS, thank you for not signing my, for signing my DS. And because we are compulsive eaters and we want our way, you know, at least I did. That's, I wouldn't be here otherwise. And that's part of what it says in the Forever Abstinent food plan in the beginning as well. It's like we're always going to say, I don't want to give up this or something like that. And that's part of the surrender. Thanks for letting me speak.
Hi, this is Catherine. I have a question. Is it possible to ask it?
Okay, go ahead.
You know, I'm not sure. I wasn't here at the very beginning, so I'm not sure what the ground rules are, but I have a concern for myself that I'm supposed to get a post-perennial blood sugar. I have peripheral neuropathy, just diagnosed, and they want me to have a two-hour glucose tolerance test, and we know that when I had a five-hour 1 year ago, and I have hypoglycemia, and I'm really, really scared about doing that test. And I just, you know, and I'm asking for an A1C and a urine before that, but I just, I don't know, I guess I just wanted to hear some experience, strength, and hope on, has anybody had, you know, a massive dose of sugar like that and come through it and, like, live through it and been able to stay abstinent after it?
Catherine, this is Susie. You know, I had to have a C-scan during my abstinence, and I had to drink some solution that did have sugar in it, and there was no alternative. And I believe that in a case like that, what you should do is drink a lot of water after to flush it out and have a real good connection with your higher power. I mean, your motives are good. You're not purposely going out to have a 7-Up or something. Yes, you may have some residual cravings, but you are probably recovered enough to know that will pass. You don't have to act on it. Make your phone calls, work your tools extra hard, drink a lot of water. But for medical reasons, if they have to give you that glucose tolerance test, in which you do indeed have to drink glucose,
I think that is that's probably fine to do from a from an abstinence standpoint, as long as you recognize you just need to be really vigilant for a few days after to guard against acting on any cravings that may crop up, but again, which will pass.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sandy, and I'm from Texas.
Hi. One other thing I want to say, this is Susie, if you do have to go to the hospital for a procedure, whenever I have to go in for whatever, I always let them know, you know, I'm a diabetic, I need a saline solution, not a glucose, but even if you're not diabetic, you can just say, I'm extremely sensitive to sugar, please give me a saline solution, not a glucose, if you have to get a colonoscopy or whatever and be put under. Most hospitals will accommodate that.
Hello, this is CW. I've been abstinent since July 21st of 09, recommitted March 3rd of 10, given back 23 pounds, and recent ankle surgery, I gained back 3. I just want to mention that my cousin died yesterday, and I hope you can hear me. I just wish for your prayers. I was not able to help him. Thank you for listening.
Lois, I don't know if you're there, but I noticed that the time's 1:08, and I don't know if you want to address the time in closing and doing the workshop.
There were some weird muting things going on earlier. I'm wondering if she can't unmute. It seemed like the whole line got muted, and I had trouble getting back on, but yeah, I've got 1:05, so.
Okay. I'm wondering, should we close the workshop since it technically ended at 1 o'clock if we can't get back on? Or
yeah, I think why don't we say the Serenity Prayer, whoever wants to join us.
Okay, great. So I'll just say thanks, everyone, for joining all of us today, and we'll all who care to thank you, Lois, for doing that. And we'll all who care to please join in the Serenity Prayer.
God. Grant me the meaning of serenity. Accept the things I cannot change.
Change
the things I can. And the wisdom to know the difference. I will not mind be done.
Will not mind be
done. Works if you work it.
Works if you work it.
Give a lot of love.
Out of love and don't pick up.
Don't pick up no matter what.
You're worth it.
You're worth it.
Could I ask what kind of meeting this is? What, I don't know the format or anything. It's my first time on this meeting.
This was not a meeting, actually. This is Kailani. I'm the compulsive eater. This was not a meeting. It was a workshop put together by one of our members, and it was for medical abstinence and traveling in abstinence. So this is actually not an official compulsive eater's non-medical meeting.
Okay, because I am...
I'll,